Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Kentuckiana Grassroots Radio. This is your host, the rock star Rev Max Singleton, going for a solo. How low can you go? Okay, that was being really lame, I'm sorry. I was just playing a song there. I once heard that song back when I was about 15 or 16. And a guy was a deacon at the church I was going to, sang that song, and he would sing, actually in a really low bass, "We want America back." Yeah. So, you know, honestly, for me, I think some of the newer young conservatives, we want America for the first time. We don't belong to a generation that grew up with a strong foundation. Now, I think that my parents did a good job of raising me, and, you know, in a lot of ways of God, they did a good job. But, you know, they were also a very, they had a lot of secularism. They were a backslidden type of Christian. And so when I grew up, we didn't go to church very often. We went to church often when I was really little. And then not long after I accepted Christ, we really didn't go to church for about 5 or 6 years. And my brother is younger than me, so he thought of it as that they were just, you know, kind of nominally Christian, maybe moralistic or whatever. And, you know, I mean, we just didn't go to church on Sunday. I'd go and get up in the morning and watch professional wrestling. Okay, so, I mean, I wasn't very deeply religious growing up, except I did believe. I'd heard the gospel at a good young age. And that helped out a lot. Basically, I was a believer at a young age. I was taught about Jesus. I was taught about the stories in the Bible. But didn't really have a good grasp of theology. And I was about 7, maybe. And then, of course, my grandparents were much more religious, and they were not only church-going, but my grandfather became a minister or a pastor. He was already a deacon, but he became a preacher after he retired and went to, from Ohio, he went down to Kentucky Mountain Missions. And so They did that for about 12 years. So, you know, you hear that previous generation that's very rich and very deep. But basically, America, from my youth, was one that still had some morals and still had some common sense that they had inherited. But I think a lot of us were becoming postmodern. A lot of us were saying, well, hold on, science says this, and this is supposed to be the truth, and you're not supposed to be a liar, right? Okay, so if this is the truth, if we all came from, you know, Darwin and all that kind of stuff, then, you know, all this stuff could be going crazy. You know, and these are my thoughts as an elementary school kid. You know, I'm just like, you know, how do you know what's what, or, you know, what the rules are or whatever. But still knew about the heaven and the hell thing. And basically I knew that if, you know, and I'm playing out in my head, and I do have a, I've got two testimonies. I've got one regular testimony, and I got a testimony against the evolutionary worldview that I've been taught. And because I loved science when I was little, so, like, I basically, you know, started playing out the stuff out, and, you know, you have secular television to kind of show you the evolutionary worldview playing out, and basically, you know, it leading to conclusions to where, you know, what's the whole point of it all? A really good movie that is, you know, really dirty and secular, okay, but basically really spelled it out. As my experience was a movie called Pump Up the Volume with Christian Slater. And basically, you know, some people were getting to that point. You know, it was like, okay, forget all this, forget all that. I feel like cussing. I feel like doing dirty stuff. I feel like blah, blah, blah. And then, you know, do what you ever want to do. It's great, blah, blah, blah. And then somebody finally says, I'm not happy. What's the point? And he's like, well, screw it then. You know, you might as well go kill yourself, right? Until the guy kills himself. There is no ultimate meaning, and there is no point to society, and society falls apart. So these things get me more in line with my faith, and then as I started studying, I started discovering things that maybe the Bible has it right the whole time, and it's us who, you know, we think we're smarter than God. Maybe we're the one making the mistakes. And I started seeing real proof of that. When I was in high school, the first thing I just started noticing was the complexity of cells, and then thinking even the grass functions like a machine. You know, the fact that it can convert solar energy over, I mean, it's like machines are designed. So if even the grass, the simplest of organisms, is designed, then, you know, maybe there's a designer, okay? And then, like, you know, started, you know, slowly but surely, started seeing things there. And then when I first started taking my first college classes, there was a question by a professor. He said, and actually when I was at Bible camp when I was little, this idea was proposed that the Bible actually taught about dinosaurs. In Job's 40, 41, and 42, he talks about the behemoth and the leviathan, and it describes them looking like dinosaurs. And the Bible translators would try to get around it, and they'd try to say, oh, no, behemoth was a hippopotamus. But it says the behemoth had a tail like a cedar, and a cedar is a big, long tree. And that little winky-pinky tail, you know, excuse for a tail that a hippopotamus has, is not a tree, okay? He also talks about a very powerful muscular abdomen, and hippos don't have muscular abdomens. They're big, fat hippos, hungry, hungry hippo. And, you know, then this art teacher, he kind of said, who here believes in dragons? And nobody would raise their hand, and I kind of wanted to. But he says, well, you're wrong. I'm like, what? He says, every ancient society talks about dragons. Every one of them. And they do it in a factual way. When they're writing down all their records, you know, like, oh, okay, well, we had a temple altar and we sacrificed two lambs, a lion, a bear, and a dragon. What? Yeah. You know, it's like, why would they have these factual things with these mythological things being recorded as fact? And then, on top of it, you see all these pictures of dinosaurs, and then you see these pictures of dragons. And, oh, you know, maybe they are. Yeah. Well, basically, these things kind of got to me. When I got into Bible college, they were okay with the intelligent design arguments. They didn't want to talk about the dinosaur ones. They really wanted to, you know, it was like some of the students wanted to talk about evidence for the flood and dinosaurs, but the professors really, they wanted it to be more, okay, we believe the Bible was inspired, that the Bible was true, but, you know, there's messes with the copies, there's this, there's that. And, you know, the Big Bang Theory, you know, you can think of God through the Big Bang Theory, so let's just leave it alone. Don't go there, okay? Just try to adapt to the science or whatever. But, you know, basically, over the years, and, you know, since then, I got my master's in theology, and I started a religious show, Bible Smack Radio. I've been doing that 6 or 7 years, and I've been doing this show for about 5 or 6 years. As I've been studying the politics, and as I've been studying the religion, I see the systems starting to work together, and I see how it's all kind of placating itself. And basically, the idea of Darwinian evolution really trickles down to every field of science. And because it trickles down to every field of science, and every field of science has been polluted, which is not just the sciences, not just natural science, but every part of academia. And so you start to realize, okay, our psychology was polluted by evolutionary theory. Our political ideas have been focused on evolutionary theory. Our relativistic ethics are all focused on an evolutionary worldview. So once you start to change evolution around, everything else is going to change too. And what is also funny is that the things that they would have agreed to when I was young, they no longer agree to. You know, when I was young, they would have felt like idiots to propose something like acceptance of homosexuality, much, much less than forcing this gay marriage agenda. But these are all ideas that have grown and grown from this paradigm. The university has worked to be a replacement of the church in society. They use public education and the secular universities as temples to their religion. They say, well, no, they're not religious. Well, yes. The John Dewey, the founder of the modern public school system, back in the 20th century, this philosopher, he was a co-signer of the Humanist Manifesto, which was to be recognized as a religion. And so humanism, secular humanism, is a religion. Not only that, but you see, the humanist movement started in the 1400s, and it gradually developed, and you could call it secular humanist, by the 1700s to 1800s. You see, and then, of course, like by the 1800s, then they started becoming atheists. Atheist is one part of the package, and you don't have to accept that to be a humanist. Humanists do believe in quote-unquote logic, but then their logic stems from the humanist attitude, the self-centered attitude, that man is the judge of all things. So basically, once you kind of shift to that mentality, the secular man-centered mentality, then everything else falls apart and goes into this, you know, chasm. And so as it's grown, as they've, you know, got more people into evolution and got more people into liberalism and socialism and Darwinism and Freudianism and all these other isms, what have they done? They've created a religion that gives you a politic. And they started off seemingly nicely with democracy. But actually what democracy was supposed to do was to destroy all the old power structures, you know, the feudal lords and the kings and all that kind of stuff. And by doing that, then they were able to work on communism, which would destroy the family, which was the last, you know, what do we call that, institution. So, you know, the design was for democracy to give way to communism. Now, America was different because we had a Judeo-Christian ethic. And what that meant was that we have different means of supplying things that allow, like, democracy doesn't fall into communism instantly when you have a Christian society. Why is that? Because people are responsible for themselves and they don't need a government. Christianity teaches you responsibility. And so they have attacked Christianity to make people irresponsible, because once people are irresponsible, then they can make us a slave state. Now, this is the deal. The government is flipping and flopping between the two philosophies. And the difference maker is ultimately the worldview, which will adhere to one or the other. Basically, Christianity is not going to accept a tyrant. I mean, true Christianity. True Christianity is not going to accept a tyrant. Why? Because you shall have no other idols before the Lord. We can't worship anybody but Jesus Christ, and so a tyrant is not going to work in our system. Now, what you do, and what they've done, is they water down Christianity. The Nazis say, oh, yeah, well, the Nazis, they were Christian. First of all, I've seen several statements by Hitler where he said that Christianity was an old movie to him and that the film has ran out, that it's dead, basically, is what Hitler said. And basically, Christianity was killed off in Germany. It was under a theory called German higher criticism, in which they said that the Bible was fraudulent, made up by a bunch of different religious folk and, you know, priests and stuff like that. And so since it was fraudulent, what was it there for? It's like, well, we could have some good morals. And Hitler didn't care about the morals, okay? Hitler cared about power because Hitler was a follower of Friedrich Nietzsche. Friedrich Nietzsche was an ethical philosopher, and he was famous for saying that God is dead and stuff like that. So, essentially, what you had when you had Nietzsche put his ideas out there, Nietzsche was a very consistent atheist. And Hitler followed Nietzsche's philosophy. People can argue about whether Hitler got everything about Nietzsche right, but, I mean, honestly, okay, Nietzsche spent, you know, the last 10 years of his life in a loony bin. All right, his problems. Sigmund Freud was a drug addict. All these guys, it doesn't really bode well. And this is the whole secular world order. In fact, Novus Ordo Seclorum on your U.S. dollar is put forth by the Masons. It's Novus, which is new, Ordo, which is order, Seclorum, which is secular or worldly. New world order is new order worldly, okay? And this was a new secular empire that they had made in opposition of Roman Catholicism. Now, it was purely in opposition. I'm a Protestant, so I've got different views there. Or, more importantly, I like to say New Testament Christian. That would be my true identity. But, basically, and I talk about this in a series on YouTube I'm doing called U.S. History from a New Testament Christian Point of View. But basically, this is a secular empire that we are in, okay? And it is in the process of shedding itself of religious Christians. And what it will do is we will destroy America piece by piece, not we as in me, but we as in them. They will destroy America piece by piece and sell it off and, you know, rip it away of every good bastion of anything. And then they will take it over and put it in their utopian image. And the utopian image is they will have the elites and they will have the slaves. And they will be the elites and we will be the slaves. which really, when you boil it down to, is that old kingdom system that they were rebelling against to start with. Okay. Only difference is they don't have to care about the law of God. So that's kind of the system that we're under. So one thing I've done is I have developed a system of thought to remedy that situation, to destroy the ideas that, you know, lead up to these things. You know, in other words, you know, get rid of the bad seed, put in good seed, and then you'll get good fruit instead of bad fruit. Okay, the good fruit is people and lives change and stuff like that. So, basically, one of the biggest attacks that has been, you know, on my heart for decades as a minister is the attack upon the family. Basically, you know, one of the attacks that they do is they've been warping marriage over and over again. And today, I'll be honest with you, I have absolutely no problem. I suggested this to my wife, she didn't go for it. But I have no problem if you don't want to get a marriage license, because it's not worth anything. It is absolutely worthless. If you have something that says that you're married, that says, hey, if you ever want to skip town, go for it. That's basically what your marriage license does. And everything's okay as long as we take your money and pay our lawyers. You know, think about how many people, I mean, divorce lawyers, divorce court, family court. You know how much money the government has made off of destroying people's lives? You know, and they just make one institution after another. You know, another one that they've made to just make things worse, CPS. You know, taking away parental rights whenever, you know, whenever the opportunity comes up. So, basically, I have developed a system of thought called biblical historical science. And what I do is I say that the Bible is the number one source of knowledge. Then there's logic. Then after logic, we have history. And then after history, we have science. And then after science, we have political thought. And then political thought is ultimately based upon economics. So the secular world goes the exact opposite way. They say money is number one, then politics, because the money will pay off the politicians. The money will get the industries going. You know, the money will determine what clothes you're putting on your own back, what food you're going to be eating. Okay? So, basically, from money to political truth, and then they will pay the scientists to study whatever they want. Science gets skewed into political ideas based on economic ideas. So, big business, big government, all that kind of stuff determines what the secular person believes. And then history gets reinterpreted. We have a modern world, a modernist worldview. Who cares about what was said to be history? We've got scientists to tell you what they think it would be. And that's basically it. I mean, most of our quote-unquote historical information that we claim is the true history in the West is fiction. It is absolute fiction. And, you know, they'll tell you about a Bronze Age and an Iron Age. They'll tell you about, oh, that's 100 million years old and 1 billion years old and 3 million. But when you really look at what they're saying, none of this stuff was seen. And, I mean, you know, on any level, was any of it seen or heard or experienced? In fact, the whole historical experience goes closer to the Bible. But basically, history is downplayed in sake of scientific speculation. So science all of a sudden is raised to a higher point. But science has to submit in the biblical historical science model. Science has to submit to history Then it has to submit to the to logic. Then finally, it has to submit to the Bible, because that's where the ultimate authority is. Because God knows everything, and you don't. So basically, I've written 28 articles. Many of them are probably pretty long, okay? And I know that's kind of intimidating, but, you know, I'll have these atheists and stuff say, where's your mountains of evidence? And then I'll say, here's my mountains, and I'll give them 28, you know, articles linked on this one, but I've also actually got about 50 or 60 out of my 260 if we want to talk about other religious stuff. So, basically, I have mountains of evidence, and then they say, well, this is bias. This is a Christian. I refuse to read. You're a F and B. You're a blankety blah, 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 blah. Then they like to cuss because, you know, basically, you know, in real life, they would be scared. And, you know, they wouldn't be ready to fight. So, you know, this is their little chance, right? Well, anywho, I do it in four cycles, but basically I always start off with scripture, and that probably scares them away. I can't think when the Bible's around. But, you know, first thing is I historically, I give my philosophy, and then I talk about the historical record of God. Instead of, you know, could God exist? The Bible portrays God as a real person that, you know, was historically there, that people saw him and stuff. But even more than that, well, the commentators and historians all treat it, and I'm talking about the ancient ones that were around that day, and they were like, this
is history. That's the way it is. But then even farther than that, talk about monotheism being part of the most ancient societies.
And so, basically, God was recorded historically. And they say, well, those are myths. It's like, why are they myths? Because I don't believe in them. Okay. So, can I say, I don't believe in airplanes. They're myths. I say, because I don't believe in them. What is that? Oh, well, no, that's not a plane. That's just an insect. Yeah, you know, it's like a little type of dragonfly or something. That's not real. It's a myth. Why is it a myth? Because I don't believe in it. All right, so now if you believe in airplanes, okay, if you believe in the modern things, then how do you prove it? Well, you'd say, okay, here's history, here's facts, yada, yada. And you listen, you give it a shot. Same thing. It doesn't matter if we're talking about future, it doesn't matter if we call it supernatural or natural. Basically, you ought to be out of a pursuit of truth. And then I talk about Darwinism. And basically, you know, this is all part of that major idea. All right, this is all part of that major idea, which is that man is not he's evolving into some sort of, but he actually comes from animals in the earth. That's what the pagans taught, and that's what the atheists teach. These are things to where this is not new ideas. You know, Hindus came up with a version of the Big Bang Theory around the time of Jesus, and it was billions of years old. You know, they may have changed some things, but basically most of the ideas of the secular world were already part of pagan society. That's something you have to understand. But they've, you know, they readapted it so where it was friendly to science and a scientific worldview, but ultimately the world they're trying to view is a pagan one. And once you have a pagan worldview, you don't have to view man as somebody that you have to respect. So who cares about your personal freedoms? Okay, your personal freedoms
will matter to you, but, you know, they only matter if they matter to somebody else. It's all soul-centered on itself, okay, instead of a selfless type of ideology. Even when the people who are selfless, you know, usually they're liberal Christians, not true atheists. But even if they are, then there's a way of like, oh, yeah, I'm tooting my own horn here now. Well, anyhow, moving forward. So I deal with that, and then I also show a lot of, basically by breaking these things down, I find other evidence and scientific evidence that really turns the whole question out on its head. All right, like, let's see here. You know, we talk about physics, we talk about Big Bang Theory, and the Big Bang Theory was made in order to give evolution time. Evolution needs massive amounts. We don't even really have enough at this point, so they're still looking, and the Earth is, they're going to keep on coming up with older dates for the Earth and the universe and all that kind of stuff. They'll come up with bigger and bigger universes and more people around. But it's not a consistent idea. I mean, come on now. You're going to tell me the universe is expanding, and then you're going to say the universe is everywhere. Well, if it was everywhere, it couldn't expand. You know, it's some of these ideas that just, you know, it's like they have a power called sophistry. We usually think of the word sophistication. They try to make their ideas look good instead of actually having good ideas. And they snow you over from the time you're like 6 years old all the way till you're 20-something. So basically they just work on you and program you and program you. And then you think that if I sound smart, then I am smart. How does smart even have a sound? Okay. Well, anyhow, so you're doing all this humanist trickery and stuff like that. And, of course, for the socialist agenda, you have to destroy the power of the family. Now, the biblical worldview is more favoring of smaller systems. There are many different systems, but these are separated systems instead of unifying the whole thing. So our nation, we should have nations, not one world order. You know, we have a federal government, but we need state governments. We need city governments. And then we need some of these governments to not have accountability to the other ones. All these things, are the separation of powers is so that we don't have tyranny. And if you don't have tyranny, then you have freedom. And there are certain things to where we need more personal attention. And the government cannot replace these things for personal attention. Otherwise, we are not free. And, you know, on a level, we're probably not that free anymore. We probably lost a lot of freedom. But what you have to understand is that if we take down the government and keep it tamed, then these freedoms come back, as long as we have a separation of the institutions. So the institution of marriage family needs to have some power. The institution of the church needs to have some power so that we can destroy the need for the power of the government in other areas. The government wants to teach you psychology principles, which it borrows from shaman pagans and the theory of evolution. You know, if we're talking about sexuality, if man is not evolving, then there is no such thing as, well, society is going to change and you're just going to have to deal with it. We deal with it by changing society. Okay? You know, you're going to have to deal with it means that we're going to have to deal with it with several people. So what we need to do is get the power back into the lower institutions, like the family and like the church. And like small local government. Now, this year, I think we'll have a chance to make some changes in my state of Kentucky. There will be some wrestling matches and stuff like that, politics, but generally, we have a more conservative electorate right now. So, what I want to do is I want to push the idea, or these ideas, and push to protect the family. Now, the idea I have is right now we have marriage has been redefined by the Supreme Court. They didn't have the constitutional authority to do this. It's a cry. It's crap. You see, the Supreme Court is not allowed to legislate from the bench. The Supreme Court doesn't make laws. So then what is it doing? Well, the Supreme Court basically decided to be rebellious. It decided to rebel against the Constitution. A lot of us will assume that the Supreme Court is going to tell us what the Constitution is instead of the Constitution telling the Supreme Court what they are. So this is a mutiny. This is a rebellion. And honestly, I think our governor has a right to say, you know what, that Supreme Court decision is null and void in my state. I believe he has a constitutional authority to do that. I think that the 10th Amendment gives us those protections because marriage is not part of the Bill of Rights. And if it's not part of the Bill of Rights, then guess what? It's not. It's something that should be left to the state. And basically, what's going on is crooked, and it is a frontal attack. It's an example of the soft civil war that we are in, and it's ruining lives. Well, even though I believe that the governor has, the newly elected governor, by the way, who, you know, unlike the last one, who just would enforce any communist theory that he could get his hands on. Basically, our newly elected governor, I think he has the authority to stop gay marriage dead in its tracks. And we have a constitutional amendment on the books that supports traditional marriage, and that's it. But I think that he has a lot of enemies. I think that it's quite possible that he might not want to go all the way there yet. He has done something to help out with clerks who have religious objections, like Kim Davis, that they don't have to sign on so that they're protected, which is good. But, you know, we still have the issue that now gay marriage is flooding in, even though we didn't want that. What do you do? Well, what you have to understand is that gay marriage only happened because of no fault of divorce. The value and the point of marriage is gone. What did they do? They basically hypnotized the youth into a secular worldview that would encourage them not to believe in God, or at least not to act like they did. And then from there, they got no-fault divorce, making families easier to destroy and making people easier become dependent upon the government. But what do you do about that? Well, Mike Huckabee came up with an idea of covenant marriage, and he enforced it on his state, and he didn't really enforce it on the state. He just brought up the idea, and this is what's cool about it. It's something that people would choose to do. It's not something that they have to do to get married. So I've thought of one that has a little bit more teeth, I think, because I haven't really read through his covenant yet. But here's my idea so far leading up to that. And I put this on Believers for Bevin and also the 10th Amendment, Isaac Kim Davis, both of which are on Facebook. But I'll read it to you. It says, thoughts on marriage. And these are my thoughts. This is not an official government proposal yet or anything like that, but we can work on it. And basically, So I'm thinking we can make a special arrangement that has more teeth than Governor Huckabee's. A, these marriages would be traditional. One man, one woman. No nuclear family members. In other words, no incest. So you have to be in that type of marriage or to be going into that type of arrangement to be part of this. Okay. And it says the parties would screen each other. Each spouse would get a background check upon the other. And I'm not saying that you have to. I'm saying this is made available. So if you need to know how your spouse is going to be when it comes to handling money, for instance, they can get a background check. If you, you know, you just met and fell in love with them, like, over a week or two's time, and yes, and a lot of people that have done that. But basically, if you're on one of those new kicks, you might need to, like, know, do they have a big criminal record? Do they have a big economic record? Well, you know, private information is something you need in marriage, so that's available. See here, C, the parents or guardians or other important family members would have a party in premarital counseling. This would be picked by the spouses. Obviously, this would be not the whole of the counseling. What that means is that your parents, you know, their opinion will matter. It will not be the basis if we're talking about adults, but if they do have a role in the counseling process and mediating and getting to know each other and stuff like that. Now, obviously, I said that this would not be part of the whole. In other words, you'll have private counseling and stuff, too. Okay, but there's a family therapy element in that. I said the minister will be empowered to have a counseling role for the remainder of the marriage. What I'm going to do here is I'm giving power to the minister. Or, let's say if you were an atheist wanting to get into a relationship, you could pick a psychologist or whoever you deem as counselor worthy, okay? And then basically whatever organization would support and affirm them as counselor. So basically, I said that the minister will be empowered to have a counseling role for the remainder of the marriage. That role will be left to the religious denomination. If the minister is no longer able to play that role, all counselors will be subject to the will of a couple. So basically, what that's saying is that if this counselor is just a whack job or whatever, the couple can say, okay, it's getting weird. We want to go to the government and petition for a new counselor. And that would be county clerk, probably. The clerk can kind of say, all right, we're going to go and get a new counselor. And they'll say, okay, that sounds good. Who is it? Okay, we're going to get so-and-so. Okay. If your minister dies or moves away or something and, you know, you still need somebody in that role, then go to their religious denomination. The secular person, probably the psychological association. It says all counselors will be subject to the will of the couple. Okay, I already said that. The counselor will be placed in the authority for emergency situations. Thereby, they will replace the authority of Child Protective Services. And if CPS is called, they will defer to the counselor. So basically, you're not going to have to worry about all this stuff of like, well, you know, the government is going to see, according to their standards, if you're a good parent. Because, for instance, the government is retarded in the idea of corporal punishment. They've made their own socialistic, anti-common sense, you know, let's bring communism back thing that says parents can't spank or whatever. Not officially, by the way, that's not officially illegal, but that's what CPS is there for sometimes. And sometimes CPS, I think it has a good service when it comes to heathen idiots. There are heathen idiot families out there that need CPS, okay? Don't get me wrong. But what we're going to do with this contract is we're going to make a more civilized family that, you know, make one that has common sense and makes the right decision, okay? we're going to make an ethical family. And so this will be part of that system. And so it says that basically it will do that. But if there is unnecessary violence that is deemed uncontrollable, the counselor can defer to the police. So if there, you know, if the kid or the guy, if there's some danger involved, then yeah, that goes to the police. Adultery is a breach of contract and determines the monetary outcome of a divorce. No, you can't just go screw around on your husband or your wife and say, ha ha, I'm leaving you, ha ha, I'm taking my money, blah blah, blank you, blank the kid because I didn't want the kid anyway, I'm gone. No, you can't do that crap no more, okay? What's going to happen is you lose everything, okay? Go ahead, make their day. And say, so we're protecting the parents, we're protecting the kids. You know, you can't just screw around with your kids and your husband or wife that way. Okay? Abandonment is a breach of contract and determines the monetary outcome of divorce. If you want to just jump out of this thing, you could. You ain't going to take anything with you. Okay? You don't get to steal. All right? You put that, two became one. Okay? You don't get to just steal stuff and say, oh, I feel like it. Basically, just like Mike Huckabee, there would be counseling. The counselor would step in, and that would be needed. There are times, well, let me also get this one. Physical abuse is handled as a separate matter by the local police, though the contract is not necessarily terminated. So, in other words, physical abuse, if the man beats the woman or the woman beats the man, and yes, there's a lot of women who beat men, okay? But basically, if that's going on, then they're going to go to jail, okay? That's just to find out what's going to happen. Just like if they do any other crime, if they go stealing, okay? You don't necessarily divorce, it's just that this person's a thief, so they end up in jail. And, you know, there's still going to be ties, all right? But basically, when it comes to the divorce, the couple must see the counselor for an extended period of time if seeking divorce. If the couple's unsatisfied with counselor, they can get a new one after petitioning at clerk. I already went over that. All right. However, both parties must agree in that situation. So we basically put a lot of teeth onto this. Okay. Also, I think that you know, granting a separation is okay in some of these extreme situations. So you don't have to necessarily live with the person, but you are bound to that person. You know, and basically, it's not going to perfect you. The law cannot perfect people, okay? So I'm not arguing this is perfection. I'm not even saying this is like the total religious thing. One thing is I didn't have a place as far as the issue of the man being the head of the household. I believe the man is the head of the household, but both the fact that I'm dealing with a society that's plural and, you know, basically the government is not making a perfect society. I'm just padding this. And maybe if there's other more, like, if they want a really Christian marriage in their government, because like what you're doing here, just like, you know, they're establishing gay marriage and they're establishing these gay rights and all this kind of stuff. What this alternative is this is saying, okay, you can live a different lifestyle. I want a different lifestyle. I want a different marriage than what you've come up with. You decided to destroy marriage and make it mean nothing, so that you can destroy godly people just by tempting their weaker halves. So instead of that, this is an alternative for us. This is something that we can have right now in the middle of this. Now, we're not discriminating. We're voluntarily getting involved in this. They say, but they're not happy. Well, you know, you can pursue happiness, but you can't go and destroy other people's happiness. You know, so basically, these would be things to help defend that. It can't prove that, though.
and the government will never prove or make people good, as I said. And you need the Lord Jesus Christ. You don't have to have the Lord Jesus Christ to have that this type of marriage that I put forth here. But it would safeguard if you actually want a real marriage, and a marriage that has teeth. And you might not be a believer. And you know what? You may still want that. You may still want to make sure that your spouse is faithful to you, that they're not going to just cheat on you and run away and take your money, okay? You may want something to where you can raise your kids without CPS getting involved. And then you can pick the counselor who you respect, somebody that you care about, that you know they'd have your best interest, and they'd really be experts, and they'd really be able to mediate your family. You can pick that person, okay? You can pick whatever religion you want. You know, you can flip that and all that kind of stuff. But what it does, it takes away the power of the government, gives it to the people. And so the church becomes more respected, or a psychological association, or, you know, or whatever you want it to be. And then, you know, the family has some more rights, and you have more rights as a parent. So altogether, this is something where it's giving the power back to the people. So that would be my idea. I don't know what I want to name it. What are they going to name it? I'd say, I'd really like to say real marriage contract. But let's say traditional covenant marriage. How about that? Traditional covenant marriage. And basically, that would give, that would start to reverse things. And that would start to allow people to have this. And if they don't like it, then oh well. You know, we're not, it's not something of force, it's totally voluntary. So that was my ideas for this night. And I hope everybody has a blessed New Year. We will catch you all later.